Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Steve Bourne. He's the author of the new book, Consuming Government, Flywheels, Ideas, and Individual Actions to Better Manage the Government Services You Buy. I'm your host, David Chulo, and again, you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Good morning, Steve.
Morning, David.
How are you this morning?
All right. It's a beautiful morning, so we certainly won't complain.
No, you know what? The weather is something that we just, it is what it is, right? It's kind of like government,
yep.
Steve. It is what it is.
Actually, I would disagree with you on that one.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about today, isn't it?
Okay.
Well, I mean, the reality is, for most Americans, as you say, their largest annual purchase is in government services. Yes, that's true. However, you say that we, as consumers, organizations, companies, are irresponsible consumers. What do you mean by that?
It's like everything you pay in taxes, federal, state, local, and walk into a store and spend that much money on something that has features and functions you don't need, don't work. You're overpaying for things. Things don't meet your expectations. Name me one other product you do that with.
None that I can think of.
But we do it with our biggest purchase every single year, which is government services. So we're irresponsible consumers for all the government we buy. Now, you know, if you buy, spent, you know, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, and you weren't happy about it, if anything else, we'd make a stink.
Yeah.
And that's what's got to change. You know, we're just not very good consumers.
Well, you know, for purposes of certainly today, we're going to be not only talking about the individual, but companies and organizations. And, you know, to be honest with you, I hear from local businesses, family businesses, even large companies, they get nervous when they are talking about making, quote unquote, a stink when it comes to government. Because, hey, you know, in this charged environment of partisanship, right or left, doesn't really matter. You know, companies are like, well, I don't want to alienate people. I don't want to alienate consumers. I don't want to alienate clients. I don't want to alienate people. Yet, at the same time, I want things from government. So, you know, how do people balance that, or how do companies and organizations think about that balance between the two?
Well, I think, you know, I have a concept in the book I call common denominator government, which is, you know, no matter if you're on the left or the right, there's some level of government that we agree we need to have. And I say start there and focus the conversation is, are we getting value? And so if we keep the conversation to what are we getting, how do we know if it's good or bad, and can we, you know, what do we need to do to get better value year over year? And start the conversations there to have those discussions. Now, this isn't a left or right discussion. It's, we agree we need something. Is it working? And, you know, for now, we need to stay away from the contentious issues until we build the skill sets again where we can have good discussion and debate and have open discussions to figure out what is the best solution. And so those are the things that need to happen first so, you know, we don't get into those sticky wicket issues right off the bat.
Well, let's start with the individual. As taxpayers, of course, we invest heavily in our government, as you have stated. In your book, you argue that we should act like demanding customers and work to make sure that we are earning a sufficient return on our investment. So what exactly can each of us as individuals really do to make our investments worthwhile?
So, you know, the key thing is no one needs to do a lot. There's more of us than there are problems. And the trick is finding out, you know, what is it you like? What are you good at? Where do you think you contribute? And where do you have interest? And take the things that you like doing and finding the things that you can help. And so I've been running the Rise Civic League. I'm the president now for the last, you know, decade. And we do a whole bunch of things that, you know, most communities can do the same thing. So we put together a monthly email that says, you know, what are the top three things that happened at the school board meeting? What happened at the select board meeting? Planning, zoning, conservation. And it's small, digestible pieces. Just what's the key thing that happened? And then if people want more information, we have links to the meeting minutes or the notes. And we ask that different people go to different meetings and just summarize that. Another big thing that we do is if you've ever looked at a budget you get from wherever you live, it's typically a bunch of numbers and a couple columns, and did it go up or down? There's no story. There's no analysis. Anyone in business would never get away with that. Yes, you need to, you know, one of my old jobs, he said, you never throw a spreadsheet over the wall without a story. The numbers are useless. So somebody's got to be telling the story. And so there's lots of opportunities for people to step in and start to tell the story. But it's just not the numbers. You know, there's more qualitative that needs to be in it. So let's say take your police department or my police department. Are you getting better value than I am? How do we know that? We've got to start to ask those questions, and those are things that individuals can do. So some people may like doing research. Other people may be good at presenting and communicating things. Others may, you know, have different, you know, graphic art skills. Whatever your skill set, there should be a way that you can contribute. That make sense?
Of course it does. You know, in the book, you talk about role models small business play in local communities. How important are small businesses to the economy in regards to your topic that we're talking about today, which, of course, is about your book, Consuming Government?
So one of the things that, you know, the analogy in the book is I use a flywheel because it's all about the economy. And we can't kid ourselves. If the economy's not humming, then nothing can actually be going on. And whether you're a small business or big business, you need the economy going. And one of the way I came up with that, by the way, is that I was sitting on a deck with some friends, and one was a Republican, the other was a Democrat, and one was arguing that the Bush, George W. Bush tax cuts stimulated the economy, they did get all this growth. Another one was arguing that, you know, with the financial stimulus after the financial meltdown in 2007, you know, all that money was helping the economy. And I'm sitting there listening to the two of them, and it's like, how can they both be right and both be wrong? Because, yes, those actions do add energy to the flywheel, but they just don't have the impact that they used to. And what I realized was that with the, you know, we've always had global trade. We've always, you know, with other countries, even back when we were trading shells with the Indians and things like that. But what's happened is those connections between global economies have become more rigid. So instead of being loosely coupled, they're more directly coupled. So that when we put that energy into our flywheel, it's, you know, think of a stiff rod connected to the other or a tight chain where that energy is getting dissipated into other economies quicker. So those jobs, that those works, that spending from all those salaries show up around the globe. So the stimulus, that the ability for government to do things that actually drive our flywheel has been weakened over time. And so, you know, the book is actually structured into things that act as brakes to the economy. So, you know, I talk a lot about the broken business of medicine. That's just like a big, you know, think of a brake leaning against that flywheel, just sucking energy out. We have things that are weights, like are the debt. Picture a, you know, a big weight hanging off on the back of that flywheel. So every revolution of that flywheel, we've got to fight through that weight. And, you know, I think if you're familiar with what happened in Greece, was that their economic flywheel didn't have enough energy to fight through that debt they had so much. And then there are other things, like when you think about the do-nothing Congress, you know, we pay each of those people $170,000 plus a year. That's just in salary. When they get nothing done, that's like sand on the axle. And then when we do things, like, you know, I mentioned like the things that we do with the Civic League, that is putting grease on the axle. So all those things that you know, tying it back to small businesses and what you can do. Anything that we do that pulls back on those brakes, all right, whether it's a small business or a big business, is going to put more energy in that flywheel. Things that we do to reduce the weights, all right, will allow that flywheel to have more energy. Taking the sand out allows it to spin more effectively. And then obviously, you know, doing the things that are greasing it is, you know, managing those spins. That helps the economy. And if the when that economy is building that inertia, building momentum, then we've got the ability to do, you know, some of the things that we feel we should or ought to do and have those discussions because we've got the economic energy to do it.
We're talking with Steve Bourne, the author of the new book, Consuming Government, Flywheels, Ideas, and Individual Actions to Better Manage the Government Services You Buy. I'm your host, Stephen Chulo, and of course you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Steve, you know what's interesting is you talk about this, you know, if you want to call it disconnect between people and organizations that, you know, kind of just do what they do every day. And, you know, there is a part of me that says, I get that. You know, it is effort. It is energy. I've been up to the State House, both in New Hampshire and in Maine. It is it's a lot of energy to exude. I've been to local government, and sometimes that's like trying to pour, you know, gasoline on a fire and watch just everything. I mean, it's just there is so much hype sometimes. How can you do it in a way that is not so scary sometimes for businesses and organizations?
I think that, you know, the key is experience and being involved and not running away from it. In my local town, when I first started trying to figure out how the town worked, it took me a while. But once I understood how it was structured, how it does things, it's a lot easier to do things. And the trick is choosing the time to learn. It's a learning curve. You know, if you've ever, you know, pushed through legislation the first or been involved in it the first time, it's hard. But when you do it again, it becomes easier. But this is where we should be not making everyone reinvent the wheel. What can we do? Let's say if you've been a business and you want to get involved, you need to do something with the legislature, where do you go from help? Where do you go to get coaching? You know, where do you get that experience? And this is where we, you know, can helping each other. We shouldn't be depending on our government because that adds cost. This is where we can step up and help each other. So if you've done some of the things you just mentioned, let it be known that you're available to help. Help with that learning curve so it becomes less scary. And we work and we help each other.
You know, a lot of organizations rely on surrogates to do that work, for example. Attorney firms, PR firms, marketing firms, lobbyists to do that work for them. What's the benefit or the danger in having them do that?
Well, because one, it costs you money, and you know they're doing it. You know how much do they? You know your best interest do they have in heart? Or they're doing a fee for a service, and one of the things that we do need to do is I think get away from that model, and it's a lot with the money driven politics where you have to spend all that money, especially when, you know, a business has to spend money on both sides. I mean, you know, if you're a large corporation or even, you know, locally, you're almost forced in that situation where you have to donate to both sides because the way the game currently works is if you can tip the playing field in, to your advantage, then you're going to be better off. And if you're a public company and you don't do that, I would argue that you're not fulfilling your fiduciary responsibility. So, you know, companies are forced into a corner where they have to spend that money. Now, you know, if you're the ones that are spending the money and you tip the playing field and it works out better for your stockholders, that's okay. But it's not working, you know, you tend to have a few winners and a lot more losers. When we have a playing field that can be so tilted by the money and how to do things. And so if we have a system where businesses, you know, don't have to pour so much of their resources into the political system, they can be invested back into the things that actually move the needle for their revenue and margins.
You know, it's interesting. You do have groups that sometimes you join, such as the Chamber of Commerce or other areas like that, that don't cost a lot, that may be able for businesses to band together. Do you see that as a problem as well, or just when you're talking about really the lobbying or the bigger efforts involved?
The lobbying, the bigger efforts, but some of the things you've talked about, you know, I talk about the book as how did we get into this situation, and I talk about how, you know, the founding fathers, how they set up the democracy to work. The democratic equation is still valid. I think we all believe in it still. But some of the boundary conditions that hold it in place, that make that, you know, the math work, have gone away. And as they've gone away, the way our government operates has evolved. And things like you mentioned, the lobbyists, you know, they've reacted to try to deal with that, like, that current reality. What we need to do is reestablish the boundary conditions so that that work for today's world, so that the democratic equation works closer to the way the founding fathers wanted it to work. And so those are the things that, you know, we need to start doing, and it takes individual actions. You know, we can't just say you can't fight City Hall, it's too big, we can't do anything. That's really the cultural shift that has to happen in this country, is that we can't vote our way out of this. The way things need to change is the people need to start behaving differently, and the best way to do that is start locally.
We're talking with Steve Bourne. He's the author of the new book, Consuming Government, Flywheels, Ideas, and Individual Actions to Better Manage Government Services You Buy. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsNME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsNME.com. That's JobsNME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Steve Bourne, author of the new book, Consuming Government, Flywheels, Ideas, and Individual Actions to Better Manage the Government Services You Buy. You know, Steve, we talked a little bit about in the first segment in regards to, you know, this concept of how individuals and organizations need to be more active in terms of getting the government that they deserve. You know, when I think about this from a management perspective, what can we learn from management that can be applied to government? And do really the two intersect?
There's a lot that we can do and take from what business is doing and help us better managing what we do. You know, government is slightly different than in the public, than for private, because they shouldn't be making a profit. But the skill sets and the way we do things is what's missing too much in government. And some of those individual actions that we talked about earlier is really where, you know, people that are in business can step up. So just take, you know, the HR role. There's a huge need for that, where think about when what HR does, the hiring, performance reviews, trying to understand who's the who's your stars, who's not, what, you know, for someone to succeed in a role, what are some of the skills and the abilities they have to have? What are the hard skills versus the soft skills? Those are things that, that businesses and HR, you know, leads in a company. But think about when we elect an official. Do we even have those discussions? You know, what does it take to actually succeed in that position? Never mind their position and their platforms or what they want to get through. It's, you know, you hear it, we hear it from the presidential candidates. You know, they're talking about all these things that they want to do, but you got a few real, you know, real, I've seen 12 already, and a few of them are at least stepping up and saying, you know, that's great, but if you can't, you know, it's pretty useless if you can't get anything done. And so with a good role for people with HR is start just saying, how can they take what they know from the business world and apply that to hiring people? So a good example of that is in New Hampshire, we have 400 state reps. Out of those 400, somebody's the best, somebody's the worst. How do we know where our state rep falls in? And it's not the metrics that are available today. Like, did they show up? Did they vote? How did they vote for different bills? It doesn't really tell us much. It doesn't say, you know, are they in the meetings? Are they the ones doing the work? Are they ones asking the questions and filtering out the right things? Are they ones that get along with their other representatives? Or what, you know, they can disseminate tons of information. You know, what is it that makes a good rep versus a bad rep? We don't know. But it would be great if people with those skills that, you know, 20, 30 years experience, you know, or even less, doing that in the corporate world, a small business or big business, could help, you know, their friends and neighbors apply that in their community.
When you say apply it, and I mean, I understand the analogy completely, get the analogy of, you know, we don't really know how the reps are doing compared to others, correct? I mean, that's just absolutely true. What do you think would be the way to actually get that measurement on the docket, or have somebody come up with a measurement that makes that work?
Oh, well, I think, you know, we already have it, and a lot of companies deploy it, you know, the 360-degree review circle, where you go out and, you know, HR departments that deploy this, they go and they get surveys and they ask the people of everyone they interact, the people that they report up to, the people they work, the constituents, and get that feedback. That's one great way of doing it. Another way is when you have, so that's like for an individual, but then let's say you have a board, you know, when there's, you know, 3, 4, you know, 5, 7, it should be more like management by objectives. It's what do they need to get done? You know, there's things that they need to do, you know, on an annual basis, which is just, you know, let's say the basic blocking and tackling of the role. But every board should be moving the needle, making improvements. So these are the additional things that they need to do besides just, you know, keeping the lights on. And so those are the things where management by objectives comes in, you know, very nicely to set those up and help the voters establish those.
You know, in the book, and again, we're talking about consuming government, and we're talking with author Steve Bourne, you have a chapter titled Managing Who We Hire. Talk a little bit about that, and talk a little about how effectively that could be used.
Some of the things that we were, you know, just talking about is, you know, ties back into that. So one of the things that we, you know, I talk about in that chapter is, let's say it's a group, whether it be Congress or your local select board or city council, is that when they start at the beginning of the year, you don't care if they're which side of the political spectrum, but they're a team. They're not hired to do the work of a political party or anything else. They're hired to, you know, we're paying them to do a job. So what they should do, agree at the beginning of the term, is to say, this is what we're going to accomplish this year. And we're the ones that need to push that to happen, because they're not going to do it on their own unless we insist on it. So that's the consumer pushing back and demanding that, hey, we're paying all you people to do this, and some things are volunteers and you don't get much, but we, you know, still need to apply the same approach. What is it we expect you to accomplish? And they could be little things, let's say for, you know, a school board, you know, did they get the meetings out? You know, are they running the meetings? So, you know, like one of the problems that we have is you know, they say, we want people to be here. We want people to participate. Well, they spend 20 minutes going over the meeting minutes the first 20 minutes. No one wants to hear that. Move those back to the end. Just figure out how can you structure the meeting so that you can get that public input. You know, the whole budgeting, we can get into budgeting, but the whole way they do budgeting process is, at least in New Hampshire, it doesn't work because they do all the work, then they have a public hearing when they've already made up their mind, and they ask for inputs. It's too late. It's too late in the process. They don't have enough time, and they don't want to go back and rehash everything out. So we're the ones that need to say, listen, we need to change the way you go about allocating our money for next year. And let us have inputs in the beginning. So those are some of the things that we need to step up to force to get better value and have inputs.
Steve, where'd the book and concept come from? I know by trade, based on your bio, you are a mechanical engineer. Tell me how a mechanical engineer writes a book called Consuming Government.
You're talking to somebody that avoided English classes in high school like the plague, but I got drawn into all this, not because I've got any kind of ideology, but as I started to get involved, it's just so broken. It's so inefficient. It's so ineffective. And what draws me in is, like, I can't stand something that just doesn't work, and it needs to be fixed. And so most of my solutions, I just want to fix problems. And this is one big problem, and what happened was, you know, people, you know, you write letters to the editor. If you read a lot of them, people are just complaining. Well, it's not my nature to complain. I like pointing things out and offering suggestions. And after about 5 or so years of this, I realized I got a lot of ideas. I got a lot of things. But no one knows about them. And at that point, you know, somebody suggested, why don't you write a book? And so it did take me about 5 years because it's just a hobby.
You know, people who obviously write books and as you said, put their ideas together have really given this deep thought. How long did it take you to write the book? You know, what was the thought process you said going into it? And did, you know, tell consumers that are getting ready to possibly buy your book here why they should buy it?
The best thing is to think about throwing all that money and not getting good values. They should be doing it to help them get a better return on what they spend. So, and if anyone that's frustrated or thinks that just voting is enough, it's not true. Voting isn't enough, and we need to change things. But most people feel powerless to do something. And so hopefully I've thrown out enough ideas, enough different suggestions, that most people can find something that they can gravitate to and make the choice to start to get involved. And so, I mean, ideally the book, you know, would bring a little bit of hope to people and action where they can go and start doing something. And that's, you know, hope, you know, that's the goal of the book, that it becomes a catalyst. It took us a long time for how, you know, our government is working these days to get like it is. And it's not going to change overnight. But if we don't start, we're never going to get there. And so, you know, the goal of the book is to be like that. And how it came about was, at first it was just me taking all my letters to the editor, putting them together. I put them together, and then a local publisher looked at it. And, you know, after I sent it to all the national ones, and I don't even think I got an email back saying, go away. But they said, you got something here. But it wasn't structured well. It wasn't readable. So we had to go through, you know, a couple rewrites with their editors. I gave it to some of my friends who were brave enough to go through it, and they gave me some good feedbacks on how to make it more readable. And then that's where we came up with the central metaphor, the flywheel, to hopefully create that jargon where we can be talking about something. So when something comes up, we can ask a question. All right, is that a break? Is that something, you know, we need to be pulling back? Is it a weight? Is it something that we're spending too much money on? It's not helping. Well, is that a sand on the axle? What do we do to remove it? What can we be doing to put grease? So to create that jargon. So that's what took all the time was those rewrites and going back and restructuring. And hopefully it is. You know, it's set up with a lot of small sections, so it can be readable, digestible. There's a lot of, you know, quotes. I think there's two or three pages of sources that most people, you know, don't care, but they're there. So it's just not me saying so. It's like, yes, this is what I'm saying, but if you go here, there's a lot of the supporting research that back up what I'm saying.
You know, it's interesting. I talk to legislators, and they are amazed by how few calls sometimes they get, right, from individuals, from people, from organizations. And, of course, when somebody does call, it's a big deal, and they think, you know, if they get two or three calls, it's a crisis. You know, I think your point of what you're saying here in the book is well taken, is the fact that I don't think people realize the power they have in these type of discussions, in these type of moving government forward or against or for something. Would you agree with that argument, or the fact that your book, How to Do That, is part of this process?
Oh, I completely agree, and that, you know, how it's working, I think, you know, you have a heart-to-heart with any, you know, legislator that's in the public service just to make things better. They would agree. They're frustrated. I can't tell you how many are dropping out because of the partisan rhetoric. It's just scaring them away. But it really comes back to us, because there's no laws of physics, nature, economics, or anything else that says that government, you know, has to be bureaucratic, inefficient, and ineffective. It is only that way because we tolerate it. We stop tolerating, and it won't be like that anymore. It's our choice to make.
We're talking with Steve Bourne, author of the new book, Consuming Government, Flywheels, Ideas, and Individual Actions to Better Manage the Government Services You Buy. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo, and we will be right back. WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Steve Bourne, author of the new book, Consuming Government, Flywheels, Ideas, and Individual Actions to Better Manage the Government Services You Buy. You know, Steve, as we're about halfway through the show here, I got to thinking about, isn't it interesting, and you talked about in the, I think it was the first segment, about educating people on how the government works and educating about how these things all come together. It's interesting because if you talk to graduates, they're not really adequately prepared to meet the demands of this. They just don't know what to do. Is that a problem in the education system? Is that a problem with the, you know, the way that people are coming out and prepared for, you know, the workforce? Tell me a little about your thoughts on that.
Well, I think anyone that's has an MBA and got through some of the Harvard business cases, you know, one of the things that they make sure you learn is that you get what you measure. So be very careful on what you measure, because that drives behavior. And that's explicitly what we've done in this country. So we've said we're going to measure STEM and we're going to measure English. No one has said we're going to measure to make sure people are civically educated, to make sure they can manage everything they're going to be buying on government. Civics and that responsibility is very lightly touched in our education program, because schools aren't measured on it. You know, none of their funding is tied to it. So we are paying a lot of money to educate in the public system people, and they're graduating, and they're ill-prepared to manage the government. My dad is not doing well in an hospice, and he's got nurses that come in with him, and these are 20-something-year-old people, and, you know, they're studying to be nurses and other things, and, you know, I've been trying to read some of the book to my dad, and when the hospice people are there, and my father's, like, frustrated, he's like, why do you have to be, you know, why is this so important? And I've done it a couple times. I've just asked the hospice people, and they're intelligent people. You just graduated from high school. What do you know about how our government works? Can you name the three branches? Basic questions. They don't know. They don't know how their town works, where they live works. They don't know how it's set up with their voting. They just don't know these things, because there's no emphasis on it in the school systems. So, you know, I think it's the responsibility of every single community. If you're paying, you know, in our town, you know, I don't know the exact number, maybe 60% of our taxes, actually it is exactly 60%, goes to schools. And we're, you know, producing a product that's not in a position to manage our government. And that whole part about getting return on that education investment is, you know, I talk about it as a weight. And actually, that's another good spot where businesses really need to step up, because what, you know, I call it something called prepare to succeed. And if anyone's familiar with Net Promoter Score, you're familiar with a 1-7 scoring system, asking your customers, you know, would you recommend this product or service? But take that same approach and apply it to the schools. And the reason why I came up with it is, you know, many, many years ago when I went to UNH for my engineering program, they had everyone in the physical science program take a math test, and only 15% of the incoming freshmen didn't have to take additional modules and get extra help in math. And the school realized they had to do it, because every semester, you know, for the coursework, for, you know, the course look 1 versus 2, the professors had to get the kids through that amount of material so they'd be ready for the next set of classes. And they realized that if they didn't go out of their way and make sure that kids had the basic levels of math, that the school, just the whole programs wouldn't work. So the high schools are graduating kids that are not prepared to succeed. And the problem with it is that the universities isn't pushing back on the schools and saying, the products you're giving us don't work. They don't have what we need. So what we need to do is take that same thing for businesses, you know, or the military, or any place where the products of our education go afterwards. Those businesses need to be pushing back and saying, is the person I hired, do they have the skill sets to succeed? Did they learn the things? And forget about Common Core and all that. It's up to the businesses to push back. Do they have it? And if you have a system like this, it's dynamic. It's not static, because as the needs of the work of the employers change, they'll be continually pushing back to the universities, colleges, trade schools, and high schools to make sure that the kids are prepared to succeed. And so that it's a place where, you know, from small businesses to large businesses need to start to speak up to make sure that the kids are prepared to succeed.
You know, it's interesting. This is an area where I think, as you mentioned, that HR could certainly take a role in looking at how they communicate back to entities or organizations or educational facilities or government or anything. You mentioned in the book a little bit about how HR can be a real catalyst to help move this forward. Talk to us a little bit about, I mean, you mentioned a little bit before, but talk to us a little bit about how HR can really be helpful in managing this process and really moving so that government is more efficient for organizations and individuals.
Yeah, I think, you know, HR, you know, groups do a lot of things, and it's different. I've worked for a couple multinationals, and, you know, some of the HR gets involved in strategy and other things. But when it's really around, you know, making sure the company has the resources, which is the people with the skill sets they need to meet their goals and objectives, and then making sure that the people, if they want more money, they're providing more value year over year. I had a great boss once that people wanted a raise, and I was in his office when someone came in to complain, and afterwards he explained to me, it's like, if he's not delivering more value to the company, why are we giving them more money year over year? And so taking that ability to measure that is really where the HR people can step in, whether it's their local community, working with people to help figure out, you know, is this board, is this committee, is this person, how do we know they're doing a good job? And it's not micromanaging the process within, you know, so let's, you know, the employees that work for a town hall or a city, but making sure that there are ways that we know that the people we're paying are doing a good job. So, you know, there's confidential and all that. That's nice, but we really need to know, are the people getting better, how to do that. And so how to take that information, work at a local level so that we know that that's happening, and apply those skills and help them out. And so instead of just saying, hey, you have to do it, and then paying more for that government, those can be the things that, you know, an HR person says, this is going to be my little bit. This is how I'm going to help. And there's also some things with bigger companies. And so, you know, if most people think, well, what does the company want and out of the community? They want to pay lower taxes. That may not be some of the biggest pain points that a company or a small business has. What they should be doing is, and HR can take the lead with this, working with the community, what are the things that will help the company be more efficient? Maybe it's infrastructure, maybe it's roads, maybe it's employees getting back, or maybe it's access to train tracks or something else. You know, what can the community be doing that helps this business succeed? Because if the business succeeds, you know, the whole ecosystem that supports that business around it. And, you know, one of the things, too, I get into, too, is that with payment terms, it's, you know, small business, cash is king. And it's really unfair that large corporations, you know, go to a small business and saying, you know, payment terms 90 days. For small businesses, it ought to be proportionally smaller because the cash is so much important. Why should small businesses be floating large businesses? But, you know, should the large businesses be doing out of the goodness of their hearts? No. What can we be doing that says, hey, big business in my community, if you pay all these local small vendors faster, what can we do so it behooves you and helps your business and helps you stay healthy? Because if people aren't working, we got much bigger problems.
We're talking with Steve Bourne, the author of the new book, Consuming Government, Flywheels, Ideas, and Individual Actions to Better Manage the Government Services You Buy. Hey, Steve, where can people buy the book?
So right now, Amazon is the place to go because I am self-published. So if you're in, around Portsmouth, I've provided a few. But the best thing is really to go on Amazon. The Kindle version will be out shortly. And I just announced it last week. We still don't have a lot of reviews. So would love to get some good reviews and buying it on Amazon for now.
No, that's great. And, of course, we'll promote it here on the HR Power Hour. People will be able to go to hrpowerhour.com right after the show. And we'll certainly have a link directly to the book. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it.
Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsandme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsandME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Imagine
hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet, watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing, dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom again. So get the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Stephen Bourne, author of the new book, Consuming Government. And we've been talking about it this segment, and boy, there's a lot of interesting things that have come out of it, especially in the fact that we really don't know too much about how these things work. And that's a little bit scary, you know, to be honest, Steve. We're talking about this, and we're talking about how HR can make a difference. Talk a little bit about how HR can look at how to augment skills within the government to make a difference.
Yeah, actually, so one of the places where, I don't know the exact answer how to do this, but it's certainly an area where HR professionals, you know, across the country could lead this, and obviously starting locally, too, is that when I was getting my MBA, a couple things, really stood out to me. And one of them was when one of the teachers or professors said, if your business isn't growing, it's dying. And went on to explain that, people want opportunities for promotion. They want to be able to get paid more if they're adding more value. So that's why it's so essential for a business to grow, so that people's career growth, because, most people want to grow, they want to be challenged, they want more opportunities. But do we want our government constantly growing and getting bigger and having more government? I don't think most people want that. So the question becomes, all the people that work in government services, how do they get those opportunities for growth, for, promotions, et cetera? And so what are some of the things that can do? I know I've seen some large corporations that rotate people through different parts of the company. So they develop those connections. China is not very popular, but one of my clients was one of the big Chinese companies, and they insisted that management switch around to different divisions every couple years so that they would get to know and understand the people, and also in Chinese culture, that network and owing favors is so important to do that. So what else, can be done within government so that employees have the opportunity to grow, to do things differently, provide more value, so what other ideas and things are out there? Another place where HR people could come in and really, drive this kind of system is, it came from my wife was looking to, maybe hang up her own shingle and start her own business. And so she was going, I think you're familiar with SCORE and what a great resource that is for small businesses.
Absolutely.
And she was telling me about the person that was helping from, and this person was real interesting. He was a high power executive. And he, my wife had asked him, why are you doing this? He said, I went from doing, being a big dog to my wife asking me what I was going to do every day. And so I come in and I do this a couple days a week, and it gives me something to do. I'm ramping down into retirement, and I get to use my skills. Now, how about if we expand that? So instead of staffing up government everywhere, maybe some jobs need, you know, some roles across all levels of government. Maybe you need 1.5 people to do the job. We don't want to add a full person. What happens if when people start getting, you know, to retire, especially we've got this problem, Dave, in New Hampshire and Maine, where we have such an aging population, but to turn it into an asset. So how do we use those people with the skill sets to get them to, you know, maybe work 1 or 2 days a week and job share around some of these things to augment government so we can get better services? And it probably may not cost us as much. But if we rely on government to figure out and implement this program, it may never happen. So how about if some HR people set up and start to set this up to help people? Maybe, you know, when people go to retirement, maybe this is, you know, where HR helps and said, all right, what are you going to do in your retirement? Here's some things you can do. You live in this community. So it's a way of helping employees when they step aside and also helping the community. How's that for an idea?
You know, it's a great idea, and HR professionals should consider how to use their skills and what they've learned to not only help in how we make sure that we consume government, but also just because, you know what, it's probably the right thing to do. You know, Steve, it's been great having you on the show today. Steve Bourne, author of the new book, Consuming Government, Flywheels, Ideas, and Individual Actions to Better Manage the Government Services You Buy. Appreciate you being on the show. Of course, people can go to hrpowerhour.com right after the show. We will make sure that we provide a link so that you can get directly to the book and, of course, see information on Steve himself. Steve, thanks for being a guest on the show today.
My pleasure.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour. And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Can you fire someone who acts like a jerk on Twitter? Hi, I'm Ben Ford from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group. We still get lots of questions about social media and the intersection of personal and professional behavior online. The answer to that question is generally yes. You can terminate employees for any legitimate reason or no reason at all. If someone is doing something embarrassing, hateful, violent, or lewd online, you may not want that person in your workplace, but you need to be careful and look at what the person is actually doing. Some online behaviors could be considered protected, such as advocating for a union campaign or civil rights. Say an employee is caught online at an LGBT rally giving the finger to the police. Are you firing that employee because of the rude behavior or because they were at an LGBT rally? Consequences for online behavior are real and dire, but the borderline between protected and non-protected behavior is murky. Got a sticky social media situation? Give Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group a call.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.